Coming up, we got David Thorpe from True Hoop breaking down the Southeast Division in the NBA. That's all coming up right now. All right, let's preview the Southeast Division in the NBA with David Thorpe. David, how are you doing today?
I am great. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. Let's start off with your Orlando Magic. Probably, one of the biggest off seasons in the entire NBA this year. Going to get Desmond Bane, who I had on my podcast earlier this week. Also get Tyus Jones. Lose Cole Anthony. Lose Kontavious Caldwell-Pope. Draft Trace Richardson and Noah Penda in the second round. A very productive off season for them. David, I'm curious, I asked Desmond Bane this earlier in the week, how people, when they reacted to, four first round picks for Desmond Bane and plus a swap. I asked him, well, hey, what was your reaction to a lot of the people saying all that for Desmond Bane? I like the deal, but what was your initial reaction to the Bane acquisition for Orlando? And do you think he was worth that big investment considering the rest of the roster?
Sometimes I think we can outsmart ourselves. It doesn't have to be so complicated. This was a horrific shooting team. And they brought in a terrific shooter. Then you factor in that they're trying to make this jump into almost like a upper purgatory between teams that can make the playoffs and maybe not quite the contenders. So in between that, right? And this guy's got playoff experience. The way the league has changed, where I think we've embraced toughness more than ever, the lack of foul calls as frequently as they were earlier, even 2 years ago. Bane fits that mold. He's a very tough guy. Can handle the ball, I think, better than people probably realize. Universally respected and liked as a teammate, going into a culture where I think people like Paolo and Franz. They're less than 2 hours away from me. And I like when Orlando is good. And I think they moved in a good direction getting Bane. I know the first round picks seems steep, but they're trying to give Paolo and Franz, very good players, a chance to really experience playoff losing. Because you have to lose first before you win, but not get swept. Give ourselves a chance. They could win a series with him, maybe even two series.
One of the things Desmond and I talked about was, how he'll influence this offensive system. Last year, obviously, you mentioned they were a horrific three-point shooting team. And with Mosley, each season of his 4 years with Orlando, they've ran fewer and fewer dribble handoffs each year. And I think with Desmond Bane, with his versatility, he says, through their scrimmages they've had so far, they've done a lot more, DHOs and him running pick and roll, him screening, just a bunch of versatility. And that's where I feel like with that one acquisition, never mind Tyus Jones, never mind how the young guys could get better as well on that roster. If Suggs takes a leap, if Anthony Black gets better, if Jace Richardson's good as rookie, forgetting that, but just Bane alone, I just feel like he just adds so much flexibility into the ways in which this offense can improve. Are there some ways in which you'd like to see Mosley, or some type of actions you'd like to see Mosley install for the Magic this year with their new personnel?
I haven't thought about that point of view yet. I'm not quite there yet. I'm still dealing with some, my clients in the NBA and going through the last week of camp. But I want to address something you just said when you mentioned Anthony Black, who I just wrote about this today. In fact, it published. I looked at 12 guys that I think have a chance to have kind of breakout kind of seasons. I could have written about 50 guys, but I wrote about Anthony, and you mentioned Suggs, and I mentioned Suggs in the article today as well. But really, the Desmond Bane move is for Paolo and Franz. Both are negative shooters. Suggs at least had one good year of shooting and then kind of fell off a cliff again last year. Paolo and Franz are tremendous talents who can't shoot. And if that doesn't mean they won't be able to shoot, by the way, but they don't give each other great space. So having Bane on the court, who is not just a good shooter, really understands how to get open, how to move, how to flow, how to create space for his teammates by the way he moves, which is not easy to teach, by the way. It's something we spend a lot of time with our players that are young, is how to get better shots. They don't really know what to do initially. They just shoot the ball well. Well, that's not the only goal here. You got to find ways to get open as defenses are moving themselves around to keep you from getting it so easy. So I think Desmond could have a really big impact on Paolo and Franz. And I like anything that just, well, I mean, I think they'll probably play fast. Those guys can handle the ball and really start to break themselves. I hope that just, I think there's a degree of comfort when you've got a teammate that can just really stroke it. I think it gives you a little confidence, helps you maybe find your rhythm better when you see someone like that. And so I'm hoping Desmond does that because, listen, if Paolo and Franz are even at 36% from three this year, boy, the Magic could take a big leap. As long as they don't forget about the defense, which they can be so stellar in, of which Desmond won't hurt them at all, probably will help them. Now, all of a sudden, they're like the Pacers from a couple of years ago where they're not fun to play in the playoffs at all. It's a big if, but I think it's possible with Desmond there.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're spot on regarding Banchero and Franz. If they just get the 36-ish percent from three, that's a big jump for them. And to me, I think the swing piece on the Magic is Paolo Banchero, because I think you look at so many other pieces on this roster, you know what you're going to get from Jalen Suggs. You know what you're going to get from Bain. You know what you're going to get from Franz Wagner. And hopefully the cherry on top is improved shooting. But there's a lot of these guys that are just good, rock-solid players. With Banchero, the shooting is what I think is necessary for him to become, like, not just all-star caliber player, but all-NBA guy, you know, top five-ish MVP type of guy. And he did have subtle improvement his last 2 years after his rookie season, went from 32% as a rookie to 37% from on catch-and-shoot threes the last 2 years. Dribble jumper threes, he was at 26%. Now he's up to 31% the last 2 years on dribble jumper threes. And then dribble jumper twos, 40% to 43.9%. Small improvement, but an improvement nonetheless. And we saw him shoot really well in the postseason as well in their first round series loss last year. And so with Banchero, those numbers, David, they still aren't great. You know, you still want to see him be more efficient from on dribble jumper twos, more efficient on dribble jumper threes, but it's at least an improvement from his rookie season. And I think moving forward with Banchero, if he's able to experience any type of uptick in that department, that's what really opens things up for Orlando, not just to be one of those teams that, you know, as you said earlier, learning how to lose in the playoffs, but one of those teams that maybe they go a little bit further than people might expect if Banchero takes that leap as a player.
I saw Paolo score, I want to say it was 51 against the Pacers, and I think week one last year, I went in person to watch the game, and he was overwhelming. Just there's no way he can't score. I've also stood next to him. My son played against Duke when he was at Florida State, and my wife and I were at the game in Durham. And after the game was over, I was on the court, and he's really tall. And I'm used to tall guys, obviously, but he's every bit as tall as they say. He's a huge guy. Franz is incredible also, I did not like his shot consistency in Europe recently, but there's always a chance he breaks through. Either one of those guys gets to compete for all NBA level, and both absolutely can compete. It doesn't have to be just one or the other. It can be both. And yeah, all of a sudden they've got these dynamic big forwards with Bane as a shooter. Suggs, I don't know yet about Suggs. I don't know if he's a quarterback. Obviously a hellacious defender, but I mean, who wouldn't want those two forwards? Those two forwards alone get them 41 plus wins, just if they're just good offensive shooters with everything else they do. So now they're cooking a little bit because they've already got that core group together.
You mentioned Franz Wagner with his shooting during Eurobasket. He was at 28.9% from three. He was at 84.5% from the free throw line, pretty much identical to what he's been since college at Michigan. Below 30% from three, above 80% from the free throw line. As a guy who trains with NBA players, David, what do you do about a guy like that who has elite touch from the line, good touch near the basket? It just doesn't translate from three. What are you seeing that's not clicking for him behind the arc?
Yeah, I'm dealing with this with some players right now. I've not studied him that way. He's not a client of mine. But I would tell you that first you try to find we try to diagnose a problem. If there is one, there isn't necessarily one physically. In other words, the form might look great every time, which, by the way, is concerning. If you've got good form, good mechanics, balance is good, shot selection is good, which is a big, big story. You just put up there with Paolo. when you look at 31.4% from three off the dribble, hey, guess what, Paolo? Maybe don't shoot as many threes off the dribble right now. Let's stick on catch and shoot, right? So those things matter. But if all those things, boxes were checked and he's still shooting poorly, well, that's a lack of talent. And that's a real concern for Franz. I don't know that that's the case because I'm not studying like that way, but we really work with our guys on having a consistent form from start to finish, A to Z. Where you bring the ball when you catch it? Are you dipping it too low? How's your footwork going into the shot? How's your footwork coming out of the shot? How's your consistency of your release? How long are you holding your follow through? These are all things that we work on. Where's your arc? Most players shoot with too flat. And so what I tend to do is show them video of Steph Curry. You know, he's got great arc. Pascal Siakam, one of the most improved shooters we've seen the last 2 years, has great arc on the shot. So I send my players clips of what really good arc looks like. And I'll even trick them sometimes and say, let me see you put like an extra amount of arc, like it seems silly. And they'll shoot it. These are for guys that only shoot flat. And I'll say, actually, that's what the shot's supposed to look like. It wasn't clownish at all. You just don't understand how much arc can really help your shot. So I don't know that Franz's arc is an issue. I've not looked at it that way. It's probably also in his head some. I think I've had a player tell me, he wasn't an NBA player, but he's a good player in Europe, very good player. He told me this year, I was crying to myself. I was crying myself to sleep at night. My shot was so messed up. I had another NBA player, 7-year NBA veteran, told me he was so in his head with the shot after the season this past year, which was a great season for him, that I started airballing every three I took. That's how messed up he was. It is mental. It's not just physical. It's not just form. And so all those things factor in. The good news is I think the Magic have got a well-oiled franchise right now. They know who they are as an identity. They really value defense. That starts with Jamal. Their defensive coordinator is a longtime friend of mine, Dale Osborne, amazing guy, also from Florida. They know who they are. They are not fun to play against. And if Franz can just be decent, you know, that'd be great. Just be satisfied being decent and do all the things you normally do. He's got a chance to be an all-star and beyond.
I'm with you there. If he figures out that jumper, and it could be in his head, as you said. Now, with the Magic right now, if I'm preparing my power rankings for the season, and currently I have them in the on-the-rise tier. I wouldn't quite put them in the category of teams that I'm like, you can make an argument for them that they win the championship. I think they have a lot to prove to get into that with Paolo Banchero, with Franz Wagner taking a leap. Do you think that's fair? They belong in the on-the-rise category, but not quite true contenders.
Oh, I think you nailed it. That's exactly how I would put it. There's absolutely no scenario that I see where they shouldn't be on the rise absent injuries. But going into the season, they should be. I mean, to me, that's what on the rise means. They're better than last year. But you're not talking about like the Wizards, who may be on the rise also, but are hoping to get 25 wins or whatever. Or Utah, for that matter. I'm not even sure Utah wants to win. But these guys want to win. They're absolutely a team that, again, I know from talking to many of my friends in the NBA, nobody wanted to play Indiana the last couple of years. And I really think Orlando's going to be that team. Not that I think Indiana's going to be fun to play against, but I think Orlando is just not a fun team to play. If either of those two forwards, or certainly both of them, take the step forward that they can't take. Remember, these are young, young guys. And so, they've got a bright future. And Anthony Black is a swing player. He just plays beautiful winning basketball with no skill, other than passing. He's, a very gifted passer and a great defender. If Anthony Black steps up and suddenly becomes more of a bully ball scorer as a 6'7" primary guard, he gives them another dimension. And then, of course, as we mentioned, Suggs. Yeah, on the rise, I think you nailed it really good.
We'll be right back. All right, let's move on to a team that used to be a real headache to play against, but not so much anymore, the Miami Heat. The Heat this offseason made some changes, added Norm Powell, Fontecchio as well, who had a really good Eurobasket, by the way. Lose Duncan Robinson, Kevin Love, Kyle Anderson, Haywood Highsmith, and they drafted Kasparis Giakoumidis in the middle of the first round. What do you make of the changes Miami's made, David, ever since losing Jimmy Butler last trade deadline?
I don't think they know what they're doing fully, and I'm not even being critical. It's hard. It's not an easy place. You've got an expensive player in Bam. You've got an expensive player in Hero. That's not easy to move, even if you want to move them. I wish they probably do or at least have Watson before. I think that getting Norm, I'm a huge Norm Powell fan, all-star level player last year. Saul's a big problem for them as a woeful offensive team. Fontecchio too, I think is a nice addition. I actually like Khalil Ware. I think he's got a chance to make big strides this year as a rotation player, allowing Bam to play some off the ball. I wrote a year ago that I thought we'd start seeing Bam shoot some threes, and we did. And I hope that continues. That's a good thing. Wiggins, he can be a solid player. They've got some solid players, but I'm a big fan of Davion Mitchell and how he finished the year. I wrote about him today, actually. Almost 50% from the field, from three, going back to, I think, maybe late January with Toronto and then with Miami. So I like that he fits in the new mold of the NBA, a really tough defensive-minded player. I actually saw, Davion in L.A. this summer playing pickup. Really impressed with what I saw. It was just pickup basketball, but I thought he had great command. His shot looked great. I think he's figured out how to shoot. So just by being a shooter and then an ace defender, he's a net positive player for them. But the pieces aren't great. The depth isn't great. I thought Jaime Hakez was one of the most disappointing players in the entire NBA last year. Just really awful basketball, bad decision-making. I thought he was very selfish, which is not what he was. I was in UCLA. No one thought he was a selfish player out there. And the young kid from Illinois, no one's, if you're hoping a rookie helps you, you're not really a serious team in the NBA these days. Unless your player is Wemby. And maybe Cooper, right, this year. But he's not one of those guys. So no. I think they're kind of a mishmash. I like how you put it. They used to be a pain in the ass to play against. This year, not so much.
Yeah, I mean, I think this roster, it's a bunch of like individually interesting pieces together. It's really not that interesting. To me, the Heat belong in the wandering tier. Like they're finding their direction at this point. They don't exactly feel like they're going to be competing in any serious level, even in the weak East. But they also aren't a team that's bad enough to be in the lottery this year. They could be competitive this year. And so that's where they feel very much stuck in the middle. And I think with this roster, I don't ever expect Pat Riley at, however old he is, 82 years old, to be blowing it up. But my big question for this team is there any possibility that the Heat become a team that does blow it up? Because I'd imagine a lot of these guys individually, Bam Adebayo, Norm Powell, Tyler Hero, a lot of them have appeal to teams that are like, okay, this can be the final piece for our roster. I just wonder, could Miami be that team that teams are trying to go get that player from? And then Miami does decide to be in the lottery next year and what will be a loaded 2026 NBA draft. So that's just one of the thoughts on my mind with the Heat this year, David. I don't expect Pat Riley to take that approach. He never really has, but if offers are strong, man, the championship race is open. So I could see that happening with teams at least pushing for those types of deals.
Yeah, I mean, Norm Powell is going to be someone that's intriguing once his 6-month moratorium is up, as a free agent signee.
Yes.
I got to believe Bam Adebayo I could think of a few teams like Toronto and Indiana that would love to have him right away and have the pieces to get it done. So, but Bam also is, the Heat are such an identity-based franchise, and that Heat culture idea, it permeates through the city. And Bam really exemplifies that as much as pretty much any player they've had, along with like Udonis. So I think that your point is good. He's 82. Does he want to wait 3 or 4 more years? But they do have some young, interesting pieces. Mitchell's not so young anymore, but Ware is young. The young man from Illinois is young. I don't know what they can get for Tyler, but they could trade Norm for some picks and maybe a young player. Bam Adebayo brings them a good strong contingent of draft picks and young talent. I just don't know if Pat Riley's be willing to move a guy that is the face of their culture. But you probably shouldn't have pride in these situations. You have to do what's best for the franchise. And I think trading him is an easy way out towards giving them a path forward. Right now, like you said, they're wandering. It's very good. It's a very good description. I don't know where they're going, moving Bam for some for future high-level players, whether the picks or not, gives him a path.
And for what it's worth, I gave Pat Riley 2 years. He's 80. He's 80 years old, not quite 82. So, but still very old.
And, I'm careful with the old line as a 60-year-old myself. So I hope I'm an 80. I look like Pat and still have a great job and all of that. But yeah,
sure. He does look great for 80. Great energy for 80 years old. That's amazing. For sure.
He's tough. He's still very tough.
Yeah. It definitely is. So that's the Miami Heat. Let's move on to the Atlanta Hawks. Hawks had a big offseason acquiring Kristaps Porzingis. Nikhil Alexander-Walker also got Luke Kennard as well. Losing Capella, LeVert, Nance, Bufkin, among others. And then they traded down and got Asa Newell with the 23rd pick and picked up a future first from the Pelicans. I still don't know what the hell the Pelicans were thinking doing that deal. But for the Atlanta Hawks, you look at their projected rotation this season with all of their changes around Trae Young and now Dyson Daniels in that backcourt and Risa Shea in year two and Jalen Johnson back, Porzingis, Okongwu getting better every year. The team feels like, on paper, Trae Young's best chance to take a team deeper than he ever has. Do you think Atlanta actually is one of those just kind of cute offseason teams, David, or do you see a template here for them to make a deep run in the Eastern Conference?
I don't see the deep run, look, that roster right there. They're still a little weak at the guard spot. I do like NAW more off the ball than on the ball. Kennard, just as a shooter, really love, especially if KP, if Porzingis can last a while. I like their bigs. I like Mogi a lot. Very athletic. I'm not sure I said his name right, but I've seen him play a lot. I've also heard his name pronounced a lot of different ways. But I'm a big fan of his. Obviously, Okongwu probably ends up starting a good amount. And he's a starting level player. They might have having to move, especially if Newell looks like he can play 5-6 minutes a half as a backup. And I know Asa well. I've actually been on the court with Asa a few times. Terrific young guy. He's just young. And it's not fair to expect much of him, especially he's very skinny. And this is a man's league, and it's getting tougher. If Johnson can come back and make the progress it looked like he was making, I'm a big Risa Shea fan. I think he's underrated because he shouldn't have gone number one. What I mean by that is he isn't like Cooper Flagg and Zion Williamson, a lot of these guys that went number one. He might end up being still the best player in his class. I'm a fan. And so Dyson Daniels, I wrote about today, has a chance to really step forward as the best 3-and-D guy in the league. He led the league in steals. He led the league in deflections by a mile. He's still growing as a player. He could be a playmaker. The Pelicans should have traded him. You want to criticize New Orleans? That was the first mistake, one of a few. But I still worry about their backup guard spots. You know how important it is to have great guard play in the postseason. When teams are just so well-versed in how to defend you, having that second or third playmaker really mattered. I don't see that, but I do think they're right there with Orlando, maybe a step below if Paolo and or France can step forward as a team that could win half their games. And I think Trey's got something to prove, and I think Quinn's got something to prove. If they can stay healthy, I think they're going to be a solid team.
For what it's worth, the proper pronunciation is Mohammed Gay.
I'm a big fan of Mogay. Love Mogay. Very athletic, but pretty skilled. Shot blocker.
Yes.
Yeah, they've got some nice pieces. They just need that one more guard, I think, to play behind Trey. I don't think NAW is naturally a quarterback. I think he's better off the ball.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I mean, they have a lot of pieces. They need to improve the backcourt, as you said, unless there's like some unexpected on-ball development from Dyson Daniels to help in that backcourt.
Which there can be, Kevin. I do think he's got the talent to do. I'd like to see that. I'd like to see them play him as a backup one. Get him out at the six-minute mark, bring in Luke or bring in NAW, and then when the timer is great, play Dyson early and see what he's got. I'd like to see them do that.
I do think that's an interesting point there, David, where maybe Dyson Daniels, you invest in him as the sixth man guard. Have him be the guy off the bench, give him on ball reps, and let Nikhil Alexander Walker be in the starting lineup next to Trey. Maybe that is a potential move for the Hawks because Dyson Daniels, he's drafted as a guard. He has some passing feel in him. So maybe that is the investment the Hawks should make with this rotation. But I think when you look at it, it's interesting because Okongwu can do a little bit of DHO stuff from the center spot. Jalen Johnson, obviously, very versatile forward. 5 assists last season. He can run DHOs. He can run point. Could run pick and rolls, I should say. Can do a lot with the ball in his hands. They have like non-guard creators aside from Trey. But it's like you still want to have that option within your team. That was the appeal for them in getting DeJounte Murray, having two guards who can do that. With Jalen Johnson, I think to me, I look at the Hawks this year, I think he's the swing piece on this team. Because if he can get a bit better scoring from the perimeter, if he can do a little bit more on the ball, that helps answer that question that you have about this roster with needing another creator. If Jalen Johnson can reach that next level after some of the flashes that he's shown in recent years, do you see Jalen Johnson as a guy that could perhaps answer that question you have about this roster?
Sure. Yeah, he's kind of like Franz in the sense that he does a lot. He's got to be better defensively like Franz does.
Oh, yeah.
But I've talked to people in Atlanta who aren't sure he can play the three. I think they'll experiment some with that and play Mo Gay at 4 and one of those two guys, or play 2 5s. It's not like KP hasn't played with 5s before, and with Horford in Boston, for example, and then play Jalen at 3. So I also, we didn't say this, but again, I would start Dyson, bring NAW off the bench, and then get Dyson out early, get NAW in, and then have Dyson come in for Trey. But what I like most is you've got 2 elite defenders next to Trey. So that is, when you look at that rubric, how do we protect Trey? It'd be great to talk about having another center that can block shots and all that. But to me, it starts with great on-ball defenders next to him that can guard down. Guard meaning down a position. So 2s and 3s that can guard 1s. But so Nikhil and Dyson can do that, which means Trey can be hidden more easily. And your defense won't suffer so much because those guys will lock up, at least to a large extent, the other team's primary ball handler. And they've got that. And that's going to solve some problems for them, in my opinion, for 48 minutes. NAW or Dyson should be in the game every time Trey's in the game. And maybe they have a two-way player that could be, I've seen two-way players help teams before. Just because they have that contract doesn't mean they can't play a rotation in the NBA. And so let's see if they have someone that can play that and fill that spot. But I would like to see them invest some time in Dyson, because I'm telling you, the Pelicans used to tell me that they saw someone in his future back when he was 18. He's only like 22. I don't think he's even 23 yet. This guy still, you know, has a lot to improve on. He's already got a very solid game to begin with.
Do you think a team can win a championship with Trae Young as their best player?
Yes. Yes. It's not easy. You need to have someone on a rookie deal wildly outplaying his contract, or like, especially like in year 3 or even year 4, or a veteran minimum guy that suddenly found his game again. It's not easy to do this because of the money situation. He's paid so much. But yeah, you put a team together that I think can do very, very well. The bigger question is, will Trey play the way he needs to play? Share the ball, which normally does very well. Compete on defense, a fair question that we have. That to me, players have to go through this, Kevin. I say this all the time. Every player is allowed to grow up. And I think that's the next phase for Trey, is to recognize I can do less on offense, more on defense, and my team will win more. I won't score as many points. I won't be in the all-star boats I got before, but we'll win more. James Harden's had to go through that. A lot of players had to go through that. Trey, it's on you now, Trey, to recognize it's more about winning than personal glory.
You know, I think the Hawks have done a good job putting the right roster around them. You hit the nail on the head, David, when it comes to the types of the defenders they've added with the guards, you know, Na and Dyson Daniels, all the forwards they have, adding Reese Ishay, all the versatility at the forward spot. And then even their centers, you know, Porzingis, his style as a drop guy, rim protector, Okongwu, a little bit switchable, can do different things on defense. They have different combinations they can play. You're talking about playing Jalen Johnson at the 3, possibly. What if you put Reese Ishay at the 2? Your team is freaking huge. We can have really big lineups out there. And so, like, there's a lot of versatility around Trey, and it's going to come down to, does he do those little things? And also, I think from a scoring efficiency standpoint, he has never been an elite 3-point shooter. I mean, talk about volume. He's a volume shooter, but efficiency-wise, he's never been elite. Can he find consistency as a 3-point guy, or maybe hone his shot selection and then the efficiency translates by lowering his volume and distributing even more. And you're pointing your finger like, yes, that's what you want to see from him.
I don't think it's about shooting. I think it's about shot selection. It's the first thing we work on with all of our players is understanding what a good shot is. And every player is a little bit different. It's not about making the shots as much as taking the right ones. He just takes too many bad shots. And we're going to be talking about another player that's way worse at it in a little bit. But Trey's got to get better at just taking better shots, winning shots, and then carrying it. And I'll use this as an example. I don't know if you've seen this, but you probably don't even know this, Kevin. But have you ever seen Andrew Nembhard stealing opening tips? Have you ever watched this? So every opening game for the Pacers, this is for 2 years now, when they throw the opening tip up, Miles Turner almost always loses the tip. But Nembhard does everything possible to steal the tip. Okay, he doesn't get it very often, but he because the other guy's tipping it to where he wants it to go. And Andrew's trying to figure that out. You can see it on film. Well, the Knicks finally realized what was happening, and they started having Oji Anunoby, who looks like an offensive tackle, blocking him out. And the Thunder did the same thing in the final. And here's my point. If Trae Young had that volcanic rage of winning every possession possible in his own way, he would be more of a winner. And I think it's absolutely possible he could do that. To your point, they've done a nice job with this roster. This is still a work in progress. I get that. But he should feel like this might be the best team I've been on. And he was on a good team before. This could be even better. They still have a ways to go. Maybe a few guys have to grow into their roles, Zachary being one of them, and Dyson too. But he should feel like, I just want to focus on winning. I think Haliburton made that jump last year. And all of a sudden, it became less about the showmanship, which he's great at. And I just thought he started guarding. Tyrese started really guarding. Now, he's way longer and taller than Trey. But it didn't matter without the effort. The effort was there. And then he's not the biggest reason why the Pacers made that jump in defense. He's a big part of it, though, because he was no longer just a pigeon to everyone. And I think Trey is, and Trey doesn't have to be that. Jameer Nelson was just as small and was a pain in the ass to guard. So was Kyle Lowry. Trey Young can be better defensively. He's also got a great mind, quick as heck, super smart. If he just wills himself to win possessions, take great shots, and care about defense, I think the Hawks will be a significantly improved team with the other guys that they have.
And we'll be right back after this break. We can copy and paste everything you just said about Trae Young to our next team and their star player, LaMelo Ball, with a lot of things that he needs to learn. So let's talk about the Hawks here. This offseason, they traded away Mark Williams to the Phoenix Suns, lost Okogie, lost Micic, brought in Pat Connaughton, Mason Plumlee, Colin Sexton, no big names. Their big acquisitions came in the draft. Con Knipple out of Duke in the lottery, Liam McNeely as well, Sion James, Ryan Kalkbrenner. Pretty good draft class that I'm pretty excited about for their roster. And you look at those guys inserted into their rotation alongside Miles Bridges and Brennan Miller and LaMelo Ball and some of those aforementioned veterans they have. Pat Connaughton, Colin Sexton, Grant Williams, Josh Green. It's not going to be a good team, but on paper, you can talk yourself into the Hornets as a team where it's like, we finally have a direction here. And yet, David, the biggest question with this team is, can LaMelo Ball prove that he's actually a true centerpiece? Because unless he does that, none of this really matters at all. All the other good things that seem to be happening, unless LaMelo Ball can do something.
So I will disagree a little bit with you, which is pretty rare. I know you don't mind.
I love when we disagree.
You're more of a draft expert than me. I knew some guys really well. I didn't really study every single guy very closely, but I didn't like anyone they drafted.
You didn't like anybody they drafted?
No, I don't dislike Knipple. I've known about him since he was a junior in high school because one college coach in particular who used to work for me kind of discovered him at the high major level when he was just getting mid-major looks. And then all of a sudden he blew up. And my guy helped him do that because he was in Alabama. And all of a sudden when Alabama's recruiting you coming off a Final Four or whatever it was, maybe Brandon Miller's year, you're suddenly pretty darn good. And then if Duke came in, and the rest is history. He's tough. He's a fighter. I get all of that. His lack of athleticism is concerning to me in the way the league is being played now. I do think he's a good basketball player. He won't be terrible, but I thought he was drafted too high. I wasn't a fan of anyone they drafted. I don't know McNeely much. I've talked to people who love him. The kid from Connecticut, from Montverde. I was just at Montverde recently. It's not far from where I live. I spoke to one of their coaches I used to train. He was very high in him, so I get it. All you guys love Lee McNeely. I just didn't really see much when I saw him play. But that's not the issue. They're all rookies, so it doesn't matter. You nailed it. LaMelo, if you may know this, I wrote an article when he was in Australia where I believe my partner Henry Abbott titled it, because I don't do the titles, an alarming lack of competitive fire. And that's what I saw. That wasn't my title, but that's what I wrote. Is I saw a player wholly focused on style and fun and entertainment and not at all interested in winning basketball games consistently, which means you have to win possessions consistently. I thought he had Jason Kidd, Ben Simmons kind of gifts built differently. Unbelievably gifted passer. Great feel for the game. Much better shooter, right, than he was coming out of Australia. He was terrible. Absolutely disgusting shot selection. That's the you heard me refer to him when I was talking about Trey. Ridiculous, ridiculous shot selection. Zero.
Oh, you don't like the one for the one-footed threes, David? You're not a fan.
ridiculous interest in consistently defending with urgency and playing.
Does
with
it
urgency.
Make you turn your TV off, David? Do you just slam your laptop shut when he takes those shots?
No, but I tend not to just pay attention to Charlotte. My rule is I don't really watch people if they're not if serious about winning. Why would I be serious about watching them? I have 7 screens in my office, Kevin, which is next to my viewing, my TV, my computer room, RAM right now, where I do my writing and my film study. And Charlotte's almost never on because they're not interested in winning. However, I love their coach. I like Trey Mann. I am absolutely in love with Brandon Miller. Love him. I wrote about him today, published it today. I think he is a winner. Where if you watch that Alabama team, which I did, especially after the fact where I studied tape, he made so many winning plays for them as a teenager. I think he can be fantastic and really the first guy to get them out of where they've been. I think the Hornets, even though I don't love their draft, I could be wrong. Player development is more important than who these guys are anyway, in my opinion. If their player development is good, I like Charles Lee a lot as a coach. Those guys can become at least serviceable, if not even decent starters or rotation players. Brandon Miller can be a star. I'm a fan of Trey Mann, a big fan of Trey Mann, who I think should be a backup. The Saloon kid, I think is how you say it, the first round pick last year, he's got talent. I think that when you can get one star moving in the right direction, to me, that's Brandon Miller, you could start seeing a path forward. That's what we talked about with some of the other teams. If LaMelo decides to join the club, great. All of a sudden, they have 2 all-star level players. And now they're a serious team to be looked at as the other guys develop. Brandon Miller needs to not follow LaMelo's footsteps and create his own path and play and defend with urgency. And if LaMelo doesn't do that this year, they're going to have a hard time trading with that contract and all that goes with it. I heard he's an amazing guy, by the way, so I'm not at all critical of who he is as a human being. But that's everyone tells me, Charlotte, what a great guy he is and how sweet he is, whatever. But I'm not convinced at all that he cares about winning, and that's a problem.
Yeah, and at this point, he's now 24 years old. He'll be making almost $38 million this year with 3 more years remaining on that deal at $40 million, $44 million, $46 million. That's going to take him through the 28-29 season. No options on that contract. There is a 15% trade kicker as well if he were to get moved. It's not an impossible contract to move, but it's really tough. And I think with LaMelo, so you talk about all the inconsistencies on the floor that you're talking about, the questions about how much does he actually value winning, and then just the fact he's been injured basically all but one season of his entire career. So you're talking about durability concerns on top of basketball concerns, on top of mental makeup concerns when it comes to the approach to winning. Like, there's a lot of big question marks for the Hornets with the guy who is their quote-unquote face of the franchise. And to me, I think this is the year he needs to prove he's about winning, prove he can do that, because I think Brandon Miller, you and I are on the same page with him. I think that dude is an absolute baller. He cares about winning. He eats, lives, dies basketball. The dude just loves being in the gym. Con Knipple, I mean, I understand your concerns about his athleticism, but same thing with him. Even if he's just a role player, maybe he was drafted too high. Maybe that happens, but he is a baller. He loves to win. He's a high IQ guy, and I think a lot of the guys on the roster are like that. They just need LaMelo Ball to show that he's on the same page as these guys, and he hasn't yet. And in the back of my mind, I wonder, is this just maturity? Can he grow up? Because as you said, you hear, people like to be around him. I think the front office and PR and, teammates all like LaMelo. But how much can you like the guy when it comes to, winning 28 games, 30 games? Like, he just needs to be better, and he also just needs to be on the floor. And until that happens, it's hard to think about this team as anything, but I feel like they're wandering. They're just in that category of teams to me where it's like they should be a team that's on the rise, where it's like, okay, the Hornets are going to be in the playoffs this year. They're going to be competing for the 7 seed. They'll be in the play-in. But it's like I don't have any confidence to say that with Charlotte this year until LaMelo proves it. And that's one of the biggest ifs of, I think, really anybody, any team, any player in the NBA is, what are you going to get from LaMelo Ball? I do not know. I can't make that prediction.
That you put that well. I'm rooting for him. I want him to be successful. I want to be wrong when I wrote that he doesn't play with the kind of fire that this league needs. And again, this league, if you watch the playoffs, it's only getting tougher. You and I talked about this during the pre-draft process. Every team is looking for those dogs, those guys that really get after it. I'd hound you full court, dive all the time, take charges. I'd be able to play a few contact. LaMelo is such a fragile guy that I don't know what he looks like this year. I've not seen him. But if I just like to see progress. Play 70 games, which, it's not his fault if he gets hurt necessarily. I don't know if he's doing all the little things that you're supposed to do. Hopefully he is. And just make some progress on that. And you don't have to be the world's best player this year. Just be better. I'll tell you a name to watch out for. They have a 6'8 or so guard named Drew Peterson on a two-way. He was in Boston the last 2 years. And I know Drew. I think he's exactly what we're talking about when you say Icon and Brandon are ballers. He's a baller. And I spoke to a team this week who's desperate to get him, but he's in Charlotte. They can't get him right now. He's on Charlotte's roster. I mean, he's one of the best, if not the best, two-way player out there right now. And I also, as I said, I love Trey Mann's game. I'd like to see Trey really take a step forward. He got hurt also last year because a lineup of Trey Mann or Brandon Miller, they don't need LaMelo. There's a good backcourt right there as a starting point. I think Trey's way better than people realize. I don't know Trey, but he's from Florida. I followed him a lot. He went to play for the Gators, actually. And I like the franchise. Let me be clear on that. I think management's going the right direction. They've hired some good people. They are looking. They're trying to find an identity with who they're drafting. I think that matters. They're building a new practice facility. I think it's kind of a mess there right now with that. But I do think they've got their ducks in a row in a way they didn't under previous ownership. And that's really the biggest thing of all is from the top, if things are going well. And I think they are. Give it a few years. If LaMelo gets better, they'll get better faster. If not, I still think this group will figure some stuff out. And again, I'm a big fan of Charles Lee.
I'm with you there. I've heard similar positive feedback about their new ownership, and we'll see how that all pans out in the years to come and what they end up doing with LaMelo. I do know one thing, a new front office, new ownership, they would not hesitate to move on from LaMelo Ball if he continues to sour over the remainder of this contract. Let's move on to our final team in the Southeast Division, the Washington Wizards. This offseason drafted Trey Johnson in the lottery, Will Riley, Jameer Watkins out of Florida State, college that you know well. They lose Jordan Poole, Marcus Smart, Malcolm Brogdon. They bring in some vets. CJ McCollum joining Chris Middleton as one of the vets on this team. Malachi Branham, Dylan Jones, Cam Whitmore, Marvin Bagley as well. And this Wizards team, they're not going to be good. They're in the tanking tier, I'd say. They're so young. Unless Chris Middleton has a huge bounce back year, and unless CJ McCollum takes a step now in his 30s, this team is not going to be good. But you look at the names on the roster, David, I like a lot of the young guys. I really like a lot of the young guys on this roster. And, you know, I think with Trey Johnson, Cam Whitmore, Will Riley, Keyshawn George, Bub Carrington, all five guys I have listed in the bench column, they're all kind of guards, wings. There's a lot of minutes to distribute to some of these guys. And I think with them, maybe you'll see this team play a lot of small lineups this coming season. But we'll see how that all plays out. Bottom line, though, I like the youth. It's just nowhere near ready to do anything of substance, even in the Eastern Conference. Who are the young guys that you like and dislike on this Wizards team?
If you don't mind, leave that roster up. I'll go right through it. That's what I was going to do. I think Sarr is super talented. Big, big fan of his potential as a rim protector, as just an athlete. He's a foreign guy. He's young, but I think he's got a chance. Koulibaly showed real signs last year on and off. There are times he looks like he's going to be a star player.
Really struggled in Eurobasket. Small sample, but he really, really struggled.
Yeah, but that's a more cramped game. A skinny guy like that, yeah. I could see that. He's still so young. I don't know Will Riley, but I talked to some teams who worked him out, absolutely loved him. I've watched Trey Johnson since he was a high school player and watched him play for Team USA. Really liked him a lot. I think he can be very good. I don't know George so well. I thought Whitmore had a chance to be really good, the whole draft debacle, and nothing's really kind of come around since then. But,
he's in the right spot with Washington. It's a good situation for him, I'd say.
Yeah, and you didn't mention A.J. Johnson, who was a pick by the Bucks. I did not like him coming out. He is talented. I just think he's a long way away. But think about it. If they could just get a few of those pieces in play. By the way, I like Kispert. He's not so young anymore, but I think he's a fine role player. If Chris Middleton could play well, move him to a contender and get something for him if you can make that happen. That would be great to see. I like to think of it this way. At year's end, if A happens, then what's next? Well, if Sarr looks like he's a keeper and Koulibaly looks like he's a keeper and any of the guys they drafted, especially Trey, all right, we got some cooking here. We got our path forward. We know who's going to be on the billboard the following year in 26, 27, those three guys. And maybe it's going to be other guys. Maybe it'll be Bub. Maybe it'll be George. It's fair to say those guys have a chance also, or even Whitmore. I like that. And who was the third guy they drafted this year after Trey and Riley?
Jameer Watkins out of Florida State.
Yes. So I know Jameer well. Right. My son, he were teammates at Florida State. I thought he was a very selfish player. Let me rephrase that. Not a selfish player. I didn't think he cared about winning as much as he needed to. He wasn't a ball hog. But it, without question in my mind, he was an NBA player that didn't have an NBA head. That doesn't mean he can't get one. It worked for him. He got paid a bunch of money in college. He got drafted. But he's an NBA player talent-wise for sure. And so they've got a number of young guys. You can't make them all stick. If they get two or three guys stick, especially the ones that were high draft picks like Bilal and Alex and Trey, those are young guys, very young guys. That becomes, okay, we know where the Wizards are going to be down the road, and that's a win for them.
Definitely. I mean, we'll see if there's a star in the mix here. I mean, I think that's what one of this season and the season after is about. Is Trey Johnson going to be one of the 30 best guys in the NBA, or does he have a lane to be one of the 10, 15 best? Is Alex Sarr, does the things click for him offensively to help complement his defense, or does he remain kind of inefficient perimeter guy and just more of a rim-running screener and a highly versatile defender? But is there a star here? Does Will Riley outperform his draft slot at 6'8", 6'9", as a playmaking forward? Does his shot click? I don't know if there's a star here. If I'm betting on anybody, I'm betting on Trey Johnson, just with his dynamic scoring ability and shooting ability. If his playmaking can get back to the level it was in high school and at an NBA version, rather than being the shoot first, shoot second, shoot third guy he had to be for Texas last year, then maybe Trey Johnson has a chance. And I like him a lot as a kid too. I interviewed him pre-draft at the Chicago Draft Combine. Funny, mature, seems to understand his strengths and weaknesses, the things he needs to get better at. So I like a player that has self-awareness, but again, no guarantee he's actually going to be a star rather than just be a really good player, which I think he will be. And overall, this Wizards team, a lot of questions with them. I think they'll be a team that people try to go out and, like you said, trade for a Chris Middleton, trade for a CJ McCollum, because it is open this year. You know, the window is open for teams in the Eastern Conference. And I think a number of these teams in the Southeast, we've talked about Miami, Washington, teams are going to be trying to pluck their good pieces from them. Big year ahead, David. Appreciate you joining me today, man, to talk about the Southeast Division. Please let people know where they can find all of your stuff.
Oh, thanks. Just go to truehoop.com and you'll see we publish one or two articles every week. And we may have a podcast coming up again. We may restart it from last year. If I can find the time to do it, it's really my fault. And we're going to do our best. But until then, keep listening to Kevin. And we got to gear up. My guy, the games are about to start.
Yeah, we're about to begin. And shout out to our guy, Cedric Coward. Can't wait to see him this coming season. I'll see you, David.
Take care.
Big thank you to David Thorpe for joining me on today's episode. Thank you to Emmy and Ingrid for producing today's episode. Thanks to Father John Misty for the music, and thanks to you for giving us a listen. We'll be back again next week. We'll have all of the NBA media days going down. We're going to break that down on Monday night. That's going to be the next time we record a podcast with all the latest news and everything we know from media day. So have a good weekend, everybody. Talk to you soon.